Hello, good morning and welcome. It's Friday, the 1st of November. We're into the 11th month of 2024. Who'd believe it? This time has just flown. And the next hour is going to fly as well, no doubt. We've got Anthony Ginsberg, who's joining us from Los Angeles. Also, Celia Brink, the ex-mayor of Tshwane, to answer quite some few issues that have been raised recently by none other than Herman Mashaba, who seems to be putting his foot into it all over the place. We'll also hear from BizNews' favorite columnist, R.W. Johnson. And then in the second half of the program, a heartbreaking story of a lady, we'll just call her Claire. She wrote to us after we published earlier this week the whistleblower's report on Bankso, which has now become Afri Markets, it appears. And she will tell us how she lost her life's savings. It's a warning for everybody, not just those who are listening to this program, but please, anybody you know, it's so easy for these con artists to steal and get your trust and take your money. We will be going into some detail on that later. But first up, as always, let's pick up with the latest news headlines, and this is from our partners at Bloomberg. Go, Charlie Pillett.
We are in the final days of the presidential campaign, with Donald Trump making his border argument to voters in New Mexico, a state that he lost to Democrats in both 2016 and 2020.
The people pouring across the border that are murderers, they're killers, they're drug addicts, they're drug dealers. They're gang members. Why? New Mexico wants to keep it going like it is. So, you know, we almost won it twice.
Kamala Harris says Donald Trump's comments that he would protect women, whether they like it or not, shows that the Republican presidential nominee does not understand women's rights to make decisions about their own lives, including their own bodies.
Listen, it's just, it actually is, I think, very offensive to women in terms of not understanding their agency, their authority, their right, and their ability to make decisions about their own lives.
A sell-off on Wall Street today with declines for U.S. equities reflecting investor unease over tech giants, including Microsoft and Meta platforms. The S&P 500 index was down 108 points, down 1.9%. The Dow dropped 0.9%, while NASDAQ was down 512 points, a decline of 2.8%. So what would it take for the market to turn higher? Brooke May is managing partner at Evans May Wealth.
When we look at earnings going into 2025, we think earnings will be up about 15%. That takes us to about $275 in earnings on the S&P 500. If you apply a 21 multiple to that, you get $57.75, which is where we're trading today. So you can expect some give and take based on headlines whenever you're at this point in the market. All that said, we wouldn't be surprised if we hit 6,000 before year end. That's the trajectory we're on, and we see these pullbacks as buying opportunities.
Brooke May of Evans May Wealth interviewed on Bloomberg Business Week. After the bell, Apple reported weaker sales in China than anticipated last quarter, raising fresh concerns about one of its most important regions. Amazon projected profit and revenue in the current quarter that exceeded analyst estimates on optimism for a strong holiday shopping season. Intel gave a fourth quarter revenue forecast slightly above estimates, sparking optimism that it is capable of reclaiming some lost market share.
And look, let's just pick up on those overnight market moves. The S&P 500 index down by just about 2%, NASDAQ down by 2.75%. This is one of the toughest days that the American stock markets had in a while. As far as BizNews portfolio stocks are concerned, Uber's results were not well greeted, down by nearly just over 9% by the market. Microsoft as well. We're going to hear in just a moment about these results. That from LA, from Anthony Ginsberg, it was down 6%. Palantir, 5%. Nvidia, 4.5%. Nvidia only reports, as does Palantir, well into November. And then Amazon, 3.5% down, despite the fact that Amazon's numbers actually beat what the market anticipated. Here in South Africa, just to bring you up to date, also a down day yesterday. The top 40 index lost just under 2%, resources leading the way lower, nearly 4% down, industrials 1.5%, and in financials here were 0.5% weaker. The Rand at the moment, 17 Rand 60 against the US dollar and 22 Rand 70 against the pound. Big losers yesterday, Sibanye, AB InBev. AB InBev brought results out, so that's not good news there. Anglo Platinum, Impala, all of those 5% or more. And then on the upside, Astoria Investments, Pitt Fuljoen's company. Isn't that interesting? We talked to Pitt on this program, and the next thing, his company's share price jumps. I'm going to play you now a clip from an interview that I had yesterday with R.W. Johnson, based on the column that he wrote this week, published for BizNews Premium, about the water situation in Johannesburg. It was a rather provocative introduction where R.W., who, remember, was at Oxford University for 26 years, a Rhodes Scholar, definitely the most popular columnist at BizNews, and he suggests that because Johannesburg is built in the wrong place, i.e. not on a river or close to any water, it's always been in a difficult environment, but because of 30 years of ANC pillaging and plundering, it's dying. Let's hear from the great man himself.
The problem, in a nutshell, is that as water becomes more scarce, which is happening not just in South Africa, but more generally because of climate change, that hydrological expertise and capital investment in necessary measures both become more and more essential. And we at precisely the point when we needed more and more expertise for getting rid of that and putting people in who had no idea about what they were doing. And that was a very disastrous thing to happen. Now, if it's all very well saying that has to be reversed, but as you know, there are real political problems about doing that. As has been pointed out, I think, in Daily Maverick, that the head of the Joburg Water Organization is a member of the Young Communist League. No experience of water engineering, or in that's a perfectly normal situation, you'll find.
You do give some credit to the new Minister of Water and Sanitation, Pemi Majordina. Might she be a new broom that could sweep some goodness in?
Well, only if she can really make the municipal authorities behave, and there's no sign of that yet. I mean, the sign one needs to see is very much increased expenditure allocated for maintenance on the one hand and capital investment on the other. And until you see that, nothing's happening. Now, what is happening, of course, is exactly what happened with electricity, which is to say that those who can afford are quickly making sure that they have their own electricity and their own water. And you will find that, on the whole, the better heeled people in Joburg will have got themselves into that situation. And this is the natural human response. But, of course, that leaves out the bottom two-thirds of the population. It's not a solution for everybody. That's what's going on now.
And the Government of National Unity should be addressing issues like this. But I was quite taken aback by the comment that you made that the leader of the country, Cyril Ramaphosa, seems to be prepared to sacrifice the Government of National Unity on the Bella Bill, which has evoked a lot of emotion elsewhere. Unpack that for us, if you would.
Well, as things stand, I mean, he simply said, you know, there are 3 months in which he's not going to apply certain clauses, but that will run out in December. If he then does apply them, then I don't see how the GNU can survive. So, I mean, it depends on, you know, what priorities he's got. But I think the larger problem with this is that the local elites of the ANC and the EFF, who tend to control the cities of Gauteng. They have got their claws into the situation, and as you know, they benefit from this in all ways, tenders and patronage and so forth. Now, the only way in which to turn things around is to get those people away from the situation and to institute much more clean, democratic, and expert management. And that is the challenge which any national government faces. Is Ramaphosa willing to stand up to those local elites and say, I'm sorry, you've got to get away from the trough which you've been feeding from because you're messing everything up? It'd be a very tough thing for him to do. There's no sign that he's willing to do it, but I don't see how you can rescue the situation in Gauteng any other way.
And in Tshwane, from what you've just said now, it looks like Action SA has been played on that, because they clearly, from the way that you've described it to us, by taking over or getting rid of the one hope they seem to have with Celia Brunk, Action SA is playing into the hands of this elite that have made all of the problems.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's too soon to make any firm judgments. We have to wait and see. But if they behave in Tshwane in the way that they have behaved elsewhere in Gauteng, then there will be a deterioration of the situation, and no doubt about it. But it'll be easy to see, Alec. You just have to look at the budget. And Anne Bernstein's right about that. If you read the budget, you really know what people are serious about. And if they're serious, there will be huge increase in expenditure on maintenance and on capital investment, which means, of course, that you can't keep on taking on more staff or paying them more and more money, which is what's going on at the moment.
It's all in the numbers. And you, as you say, you can assess and analyze that. But what if you lived in Johannesburg today, or you have people from Johannesburg saying to you, Bill, I'm worried when I read what you're writing. It makes sense to me, but what can I do to fix this?
Well, of course, the individual will try to become more self-sufficient. And that is what is happening, as I say. And there will be a great scramble, just like the world with solar panels and electricity. And that is going on with water as we speak. But as we can see, we've seen in other parts of the country as well, that the problem is that you pretty quickly get a sort of water mafia controlling water tankers, exploiting the situation. And for the bottom two-thirds of the population, that's actually the option.
But that must surely lead to social unrest in time.
I think so. And before that, it probably leads to some fairly explosive results in the municipal elections too.
Results in which way?
Well, we don't know yet, because we're still in the honeymoon period of the GNU, and the last polling information we had was that this was good for both the ANC and the DA. But it remains to be seen. I think if the municipal situation in Gauteng continues to deteriorate, then it would be very surprising if the ANC and possibly the EFF both lose votes again.
The full interview with R.W. Johnson is on the BizNews TV channel. Anthony Ginsberg joins us now. Anthony, let's start off with those results and the way that the stock market reacted to, in particular, Amazon. I thought the numbers were excellent, and yet share price down 3.5% on a really poor day for shares.
Yes, Alec, it was a tough day. Greetings from a Halloween suffering market, but actually these are speed bumps. Quite frankly, they were very, very elevated expectations, Alec. Amazon actually shot the ball out of the park. The cloud numbers were up almost 20% year on year, and they had a 19% growth in their advertising revenue. So the numbers were actually very impressive. We actually think that between Google and Amazon, those were the two best performers this week for big tech. And there's a reason why Meta We'll get to it in a moment. And Microsoft have suffered more. Interestingly, Amazon have actually kept their CapEx expenditure, which is concerning a lot of Wall Street analysts about the AI expenditures going through the roof. They've actually kept it relatively muted along with Apple, and they were rewarded. So Amazon's share price actually jumped after hours about 5%, Alec. By comparison, you've had Meta, Facebook down quite a lot, about 5%. And we also had Microsoft yesterday down about 6%. And those were basically because of elevated capital expenditures. They're basically spending about double their run rate from previous years. This is both Microsoft and Meta. And they got downgraded essentially by the likes of Wall Street. So that's what happened over there. But that's very specific just to Meta and to Microsoft.
Very good point you make, Anthony, and we forget it here in South Africa. When the market closes here, it closes, and that's the price. But in America, there is an aftermarket, and as a consequence of that, we need to pay close attention. So a little earlier in the program, I said, Amazon down by 3.5% despite good results. However, the aftermarket shows that was temporary, and it's gone up. Okay, what about Apple?
Well, Apple's got a bit of an overhang because of the Chinese market, Alec, but their revenues were up almost 7%. The best revenues actually year on year were, frankly, both Meta and Microsoft both had double digits. So by comparison, Apple's a slower mover, but it's coming off less expectations. You've got to remember, Facebook ran up almost 70% this year, Alec. So this is why, unless they had perfect earnings, it was going to be hit. I mean, it's been one of the best performers out there. Apple essentially hasn't been a wonderful performer this year. It's actually underperformed the S&P 500. So it's all relative. Of course, there's nervousness overhanging the U.S. election here. And one of the sleeping trades out here in California relates to the fact that a possible Trump victory would actually be a boost for M&A activity in the tech space. So a lot of overhang, people waiting to see what happens next Tuesday, because one of the first to be shown the door if Trump does win would be his antitrust, anti-monopolistic Federal Trade Commission leaders, who have actually blocked a number of big tech mergers. And even certain IPOs have been stopped based on issues with the federal government. So if there was to be a change from Biden-Harris to Trump, we could actually see a rally in tech stocks, Alec.
It's such an interesting point you make there. I was listening to an interview with Reid Hoffman, the man who started LinkedIn. And while he is endorsing Kamala Harris, he has said that one of the things that he does not like, or anybody in tech does not like, is this idea that the big companies can't buy any small companies anymore, he said, because it's really first-level thinking. If you can't buy the smaller companies, you're not going to see them emerging because they won't get capital from people like him to develop, and because there's no exit. And it is interesting to kind of contrast, and Trump gets it. Kamala Harris doesn't get it, clearly, or the Biden administration doesn't get it. But do we really need to pay that much attention if you're owning tech stocks to the result of the election?
Well, in our case, we've got this 2 billion rand ETF called this Tech Megatrend, and we've got 120 stocks in there. The mega caps sure make up about 10 to 15%, Alec, but we've got a number of smaller mid caps and large caps that are on the acquisition block. And those deals can't go through. So we think there will be a relief rally were Trump to win. Interestingly enough, for the first time, a lot of Silicon Valley, which is historically Democratic supportive, have actually swung over to Trump, so including Elon Musk famously. And if there's an efficiency czar with Elon in D.C. overseeing it, there'll be a lot more outsourcing to cybersecurity, to external AI providers, cloud providers. We've talked about it in the past, but cloud is really one of the massive drivers of this AI boom. And just very quickly, Amazon disappointed, actually. They only had a 19% gain in cloud. And you and I talked the other day that Google actually shot the lights out with 35%. Microsoft had 33% cloud gains. So it's very exciting times. These are almost like first cousins, but even cybersecurity is also interlinked. There's a lot of convergence across these technologies. It's incredibly difficult to time it. My main point really is it's not just the Magnificent Seven, Alec. There's a whole ecosystem out there of acquisitions that have been delayed, essentially, and the M&A activity has really ground to a bit of a halt over here.
So when you put it all together, five of the Magnificent Seven reported this past week. Just take us through the way that Anthony Ginsberg of Gins Global is looking at these. You did say earlier Alphabet was the star of the show. maybe explain why and who was the one that disappointed you, and perhaps investors who own all seven should be looking at and considering maybe switching.
Well, there was also an overreaction with one of your favorites, Uber, which is down 11% overnight, Alec.
Wow.
But Uber is actually earning over $1 billion a quarter, and they've just gained something like a 70% year-on-year gain in membership to Uber. So there's just been this overreaction, quite frankly. We're most positive at the moment on Google, but also on Meta, as well as Microsoft. We think Microsoft is incredibly well-positioned, obviously with their ChatGPT OpenAI acquisition. But what's concerning some analysts, and they've probably overreacted overnight, is that the outlook for the fourth quarter has made some of them nervous that the spending percentage, just as a percentage of revenues, just interestingly, 25% of revenues are being spent on AI data centers. It's a massive game changer from a year ago. This is in particular Microsoft and Meta, whereas Amazon and Alphabet are spending about half of that rate, about 12 to 14% of their gross revenue. So it's made a few of the analysts rather nervous, particularly on the Meta story and Microsoft. So we're actually long-term very bullish. We see it actually as a buying opportunity, probably ahead of the election. We've actually put a little bit of money to work because there is this nervous overhang for the next couple of days here.
Okay, and the one you would not be putting money into?
Fair question. You know, when it comes to China, it's very questionable what's going on there with the economy. So we've been nervous about Alibaba for a while, as well as Baidu, just on the tech side specifically. And yes, Apple is a bit more exposed to China. And the reason people still will never sell Apple is their ecosystem is probably larger and bigger than most of the other tech players. So you can't really exit it. It's a long-term play, but we're probably less excited at the moment about Apple relative to Amazon and Alphabet.
So if I read you correctly, this pullback that we're seeing in tech stocks, particularly last night, if it continues, will present a buying opportunity, not a scare that there could be a crash.
Yeah, we basically see it as a speed bump. We think some of the Wall Street analysts were a bit blindsided by the fact that the CapEx that Zuckerberg and Meta and others, that they're just going to continue spending close on 25% of their annual revenues. It's a huge number and people have to get their head around it. But just fundamentally, this AI story, Alec, is dominated by the Magnificent Seven. It is a big boy story and it's very hard for the smaller players to get in. We actually see a lot more acquisitions coming down the pipeline. So for us, we've actually positioned a lot of our portfolio in our ETF in the large cap and mid cap space, predicting more acquisitions. We see cloud companies buying cybersecurity companies, so-called hyperscalers. So there's just a lot of movement in the space, but we're all waiting for this Tuesday overhang. So hopefully there will be a relief rally and you may see quite a difference if Trump actually pulls through.
And that's the other point to summarize. Donald Trump would get rid of the antitrust czar who's been blocking takeovers by the big companies of smaller companies. And that would then release opportunities for the smaller companies to be bought. As you say, mergers and acquisitions would then take off in the tech space. If Kamala Harris wins, the antitrust czar will stay there and she will then continue to block these kind of mergers with her approach to the economy. So that might see the reverse of a relief rally, maybe further declines in tech stocks.
Well, the other quick thing is that robotics is going to benefit, Alec, with more and more onshoring. Whether Harris wins or Trump wins, that we see more tariffs coming down the pipe, particularly with Trump. And that would mean that there's going to be more factory automation in the U.S. We know for a fact that the U.S. factory workers are not as competitive price-wise as overseas. And America has never automated to the extent that the South Koreans and the Japanese have. So we've actually bought into quite a few robotics companies who will help automate more of the car manufacturing and whatnot in this country. We're expecting a lot more tariffs being implemented. Expect more China trade wars if Trump is elected.
Anthony Ginsberg from Gins Global, thanks for joining us, Anthony. We really appreciate your contribution from the from where the tacky hits the tar. He lives in LA. That's pretty close to Silicon Valley, where all the action happens. And Anthony, as you can hear, is South African. He moved to the United States, to California, quite some time ago, and he is now running a very, very large portfolio of a company that he built himself. Well, we've had Celia Brink, the former mayor of Tshwane, in the backstage. Celia, thanks for being so patient, and apologies that Mr. Ginsburg's connectivity didn't work the way that it should. But you did see the R.W. Johnson clip, and I'm sure you must have afforded yourself a smile when he fully agreed that Action SA was being played by the elite of the ANC and the EFF. Do you see it the same way?
So, Alec, Herman Mashaba blew up a perfectly stable, functional coalition and handed control of Pretoria, the Tshwane Metro, to the ANC and the EFF. And I think quite rightly that characterization, well, it's not R.W. Johnson's, but I think the implication is clear. This is the Gauteng faction, the Alex Mafia faction of the ANC. And now, you know, in exchange for that brazen act of betrayal, they got the mayoral position. But the Action SA mayor sits with a majority of her mako coming from the ANC and the EFF. The ANC control key portfolios of finance and utility services. On the day that the Action SA mayor was elected, her ANC deputy, a chap by the name of Bonzo Modise, said to her in his council speech, his congratulatory speech, if you don't do what we tell you to do, we'll remove you like the previous guy. So indeed, you know, Herman Mashaba has created an enormous mess in Tshwane. He doesn't live here. He doesn't experience what will be the consequences, or he won't. But in order for him to justify this, he's had to come up with many stories. You know, the DA was arrogant. I am arrogant. But the man's never met me in my position as mayor. He said that we neglected townships. And yet, under my leadership, the city spent the most of our capital and operational budget in the townships. He's referred to the city's financial position, and yet his party was part of the government that devised a financial recovery plan, which at the end of our administration was starting to yield significant results. And now Tshwane is in the position of saying things like, in the next year, we want to pay off our Eskom debt. We want to reach revenue targets of $4 billion a month. Those objectives was built on work done by our government. I'm not sure if Herman Mashaba has been played or if he is just a cynical politician who, to save his party, to give them a new reason for existence, has decided to reposition themselves. But the implications are clear, and it's bad news for the voters of the Tshwane Metro.
I'd like you also just to give us your view on a comment that he made in an interview with Chris Stein this week, where he said that Joburg is in a far better position than Tshwane, that Joburg's better position than Tshwane. Joburg, however, can still be rescued, almost with the implication that you'd messed up Tshwane, because anybody who lives in Johannesburg or has visited it recently knows that it's not in a good state. Can you quantify for us differences perhaps between the two metros?
So let's talk about water, because water losses is quite a good indication of the state of your infrastructure. Joburg is now at 44-45% water losses. In other words, of all of the water that Joburg procures from Rand Water, they lose 44-45% in leaks, in illegal connections, in pipe bursts, and so forth. Now, compared to Tshwane, that is atrocious. We've got a rate of 30%, which is still too high. But the state of decay of infrastructure in Johannesburg is absolutely next level. And you can hear it in the way that the mayor of Johannesburg and his predecessor, it doesn't seem to be much of a difference between the two, speak about their ambitions for the city. They don't say, we want to reach the following objectives. They say, the task of fixing the city is so overwhelming that people mustn't expect much. In fact, Alec, recently the mayor of Joburg said they are looking for proposals from members of the public of how to turn the city around. Now imagine that, the leader, an elected leader in government, asking the people who he is meant to serve, who he's meant to provide vision and direction to, what should we do to fix this mess? So no, Johannesburg is in a far worse position than Tshwane. Tshwane does have serious financial problems. We've never been in denial about that. Many of those problems were caused by the intervention of the ANC Gauteng government in the city. The city council was dissolved at the height of the COVID-19 lockdown. ANC provincial administrators took charge for an unprecedented period of 7 months and were only evicted by court order. And in that time, Tshwane turned from an operational surplus of over 200 million to an operational deficit in excess of 4 billion. What Mr. Mashaba has done is to take the team who was leading a financial recovery out of power and replace them with folks that have got absolutely no record of success in government. R.W. Johnson referred to the local elites, and that's exactly what is happening in Tshwane. I think they imagined, because the city's financial position is marginally better, that there now is some opportunity to benefit, especially in the run-up to ANC conference season. Regional conferences will be held in Gauteng next year. And anyone who has watched the Zondo Commission knows that the ANC's modus operandi is to use public resources to achieve political ends. So Mashaba, I don't think much will be left of him at the next election. And so, you know, really, it's all about what do we do now to prevent a city like Tshwane, which is not nearly as bad as Johannesburg, from falling apart.
I had many conversations when Jacob Zuma was appointed president of South Africa with business leaders, and especially with his second term. And there was almost the despondency there of saying, well, we know he's corrupt, we know he's crooked, we know what's going on there, but we're just going to have to ride this one out. How long, if one takes that approach, businesses in Johannesburg and Tshwane take that approach, how long are they going to have to ride it out until perhaps there will be a return to some kind of rationality?
Well, 2026 is the next local government election, and that will be the reckoning for parties like Action SA. They did very well in 2021, better in Joburg than in Tshwane, but still they won about 19 seats in the city council in 2021, 19 of the 214, which gives them a significant power or a significant bargaining position. Now, if you were to project their 2024 general election results onto a local scenario, they would reduce from 19 seats to 6 seats. And I think they'll get even fewer seats in 2026. So there's the real chance of a consolidation of support around the bigger parties, well, the DA in particular. MK was not a factor in 2021. It will probably be a factor in 2026. Marginal in Tshwane. I think they got about 3 or 4% in the general election. But, you know, if they achieve the same performance in 2026, it will weaken the ANC. It will fragment that vote. And I'm sure that the DA will consolidate from the feedback we're getting. Folks telling me, we voted for Action SA last time. We regret it deeply. And we're going to back you in 2026. But, Alec, on the upside, one of the things we did get right in Tshwane was to appoint a competent, professional, non-political top management. City manager Johan Mettler, who has got a great track record in Nelson Mandela Bay, and he brought in a team of people, and they were steadily changing the organizational culture. Now, I'm convinced that these folks will not sign off on rigged tenders, on blatant attempts at looting public coffers, and that places a bit of a check on the abuse of power by this ANC-EFF Action SA coalition. But let me just also say a little bit about water, because you spoke to R.W. Johnson about water. The key really is what he says. You have to spend as much capital as possible on infrastructure. But the question is, how do you get that money? How do you raise that money? And in Tshwane, we worked with National Treasury to devise a strategy, which we adopted in the past 2 months, to do three things in particular. First, you got to structure your water business in a separate unit. It doesn't need to be an entity. It doesn't need to have a separate board and so forth. But you need to hold dedicated officials responsible for the performance of your water operation. Secondly, you've got to ring fence a part of the income that you make from water. Remember, water is a trading service. In other words, you make a surplus on it, and that surplus is meant to allow you to generate savings and borrowings to roll out capital projects. And then lastly, you need separate financial statements for your water business. That will allow you, those reforms will allow you to bring in private sector partners. So you can say to company X or Y, you manage this part of the water network. If you can reduce distribution losses from 30% to 25%, that is a significant saving. Let's do a profit share on that, to say it in simple terms. And that's the way you're going to fix the infrastructure. You can try and persuade consumers to use less water. It's difficult when your government is not as effective as, for instance, in the city of Cape Town. And so reducing the wastage by municipalities is the only sure way of avoiding a water crisis. We have that in place in Tshwane. The new mayor doesn't seem to have much of an agenda of her own. She can either default to the ANC or she can try and stick to what we've devised. We've encouraged her to implement strategies like the water turnaround strategy. But let's see. Maybe they don't mess everything up in the 2 years it'll take to meet them at the ballot box.
Well, that's some hope on that side. Just from a personal perspective, there are people who reckon you could be the next leader of the Democratic Alliance. And if you're a politician, so clearly you have ambition, why are you staying in Tshwane when there would be a pretty good job for you in Cape Town, in National Assembly?
Well, I suppose it's similar to why did you come here into the mess of Gauteng politics from a comfortable seat in Parliament? And to me, the personal motivation was I was part of that team in 2016. I was a member of the mayoral committee when Solim Semanga was the mayor of Tshwane. And we didn't have a majority and we struggled to carry through many of our decisions. And there was a great deal of disappointment. You know, the public voted for change and they expected that once you swap an ANC mayor with a DA mayor, you have Cape Town, or basically a roadmap to get to Cape Town. And that didn't happen. And to me, it's really important to finish that initial mission of bringing change, of cleaning up the mess left by the ANC, of reconfiguring our politics. And you know, Alec, the key to the growth of the DA is in Gauteng. It's not in the Western Cape. We've maxed out our growth there, potentially. Well, yeah, we did grow in Khayelitsha and Guguletu at the last election. But the key to our growth is in Gauteng. And we have to show the people of Gauteng that we care, that we will fight for them. The city of Tshwane has got more DA voters than Limpopo and Mpumalanga and the Northwest put together. So it is a really important place for the DA. It's the one place that we can become the biggest party and show that we can make a difference in government. And quite frankly, we were rudely interrupted, and I am quite determined that we should finish what we did in the 18 months under my leadership.
It's Leah Brink, the former mayor of Tshwane, bringing us up to date on what's happening in that city. Well, it seems like Herman Mashaba just can't stop putting his foot into it at the moment. In the interview with Chris Stain earlier this week on BizNews, he had a go at Phumlani Mojozi, who then called us clowns for not allowing him to have that conversation or to be in the conversation with Herman Mashaba. And the equally feisty Chris Stain had a very interesting interview with Phumlani. Let us now just pick up with Chris and find out exactly what Phumlani had to say to, or why he was calling us, or calling BizNews, clowns. The full interview is on BizNews TV, so you can pick it up there. It's available. It's about a 20-minute interview, really interesting. And, of course, the previous interview with Herman Mashaba, where he made those allegations, as you just heard, against Celia Brink and other things, is also on BizNews TV. But let's listen now to Pumlani Majozi.
I just want to ask you, after we aired the interview with Mr. Mashaba yesterday, you called us at BizNews clowns. So what's your definition of a clown? What makes me a clown, Pumlani?
No, I was upset because you bring Mr. Herman Mashaba on the show to talk about me and I'm not there. For me, in my view, firstly, the first thing is that if you have a private citizen who raises such issues on the internet and says that there isn't the right, you know, values being presented by black leaders in the country, you have to bring me on the show. This is just my view. You rather bring me than the head of a political party in this country, a politician, who says that he's in a process of putting some legal documents together to run after me as a private citizen for expressing my, you know, my opinion. So for me, if you are really the right thing for you that you should have done as BizNews is to invite me rather than Herman Mashaba to talk about me. If you invite Mr. Herman Mashaba, then it's best that you have me as well, you know, on the show. I don't have an issue with debating Mr. Herman Mashaba on the platform. In fact, I would love to engage him on these issues, right? So he can tell me, why must I be happy about the black leadership in this country, given where we are, right? You know, why must I be happy? He has to, and what I dislike about what he's doing is that he paints everything as, I'm attacking black people. No, I'm talking about the black leaders who are not advocating for the values. In my perspective, I have a right to say that in my perspective, they are not representing the values we need as a society. In a democratic South Africa, I do have a right to do that. So your platform, and I'm disappointed to Alec, who I've known for years now, that he could do something like that. Rather bring me. In fact, I am sitting here because now I said that. Probably, if I had not said that, you would have never invited me, right? But
I don't think you should make that assumption as to what we were.
I'm assuming, I doubt.
Because I did invite you this morning, and here you are, and you have replied to Mr. Mashaba's statements of yesterday, and we thank you for that.
Yeah, but what was after I posted that, right? So I wouldn't know if you would have done it if I had not posted that. So for me, no, you should have people like Mashaba, bring people like us. These are serious conversations, Chris. Bring people like us so we can engage politicians like him and Mashaba in these issues, where they go around spreading the narrative, it's apartheid, it's the apartheid system, apartheid is still alive. Bring people like us to say, look, let's focus on fixing South Africa. Because that's the way forward, is to fix South Africa.
At Sun Exchange, good morning. We make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Well, you've been following, I hope, the Bankso story. And the Bankso story has taken a lot of Chris Steyn's time over the last few months. Essentially, just for background, there were deepfake ads featuring Johann Rupert, Elon Musk, even Nikki Oppenheimer saying, hey, invest your money here, great place to go to. This has all been exposed. The Financial Services Conduct Authority has intervened. We had earlier this week a whistleblower who told us about the experience that he'd had. Even though Bankso has been suspended from trading, it seems as though the same people, a clone has now come up called Afri Markets. And then we spoke with Gerard van Deventer from the Financial Services Conduct Authority, who was very outspoken at how this needs to be addressed. And in the course of this week, we received a letter from a lady. We're just going to call her Claire. Claire, nice to have you with us, and thank you for sharing your story with us. I'm sure many people will benefit from it.
Morning. Yes, hi. Thanks for having me and being able to express what I've gone through in the past 2 weeks. It's quite overwhelming.
Let's start at the beginning. How did you get to be exposed to Bankso in the first place?
So I had a sort of a lull in period of work. And in that lull, at the moment, has been a lot of hype about investing in stocks, a lot on TikTok and a lot on all of these things about, you know, trying to start investing and invest your money and don't let it sit there and waste. So I thought to myself, well, while I'm sitting here and work is super quiet, I've gone online and YouTube and been researching and trying to find out more about how to go about trading. And then I came across Easy Equities and I sort of went in and delved a little bit with the Easy Equities, and which are all safe options. And I did a lot of research in it. And in all of this process and this growth, I all of a sudden was on Facebook. Now I'm like become familiar with a few terms like NASDAQ and all these different things. So on Facebook, I see this Elon Musk advert and basically just saying, we'll help you trade, you know, come and join us. And it's very convincing. So I thought, you know, this is interesting. So I clicked on it. And the next thing you know, obviously put in your details if you would like to just find out more. And I got a phone call within about 5 minutes from a Mr. Abrahams, I think it's Tahir Abraham. And within 5 or 10 minutes, he had convinced me that this is such an incredible platform. He says, he's absolutely unbelievable. These guys have been trading for 20, 30 years. All they do is they hold your hand and they teach you how to trade. He said that there is absolutely zero chance of loss because they've been doing it forever. They're in the money-making business. So I'm like, okay. He says, listen, all you need to do is, for now, just deposit 4,500 rand. If you do that now, in the next sort of 2 hours, we'll give you a bonus of 1,500 rand. So I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I'm actually ready right now. I'll maybe do a little bit more research. So then he went on to tell me how they have got head offices in Sea Point. You can pop in at any time and go and have a cup of coffee with them. Their doors are always open. So I'm like, oh, okay, now you're making it sound a little bit more convincing. And he says, let me tell you, I'm going to do it with you over the phone and you can do a pay link right now as we're talking. And the next thing I know, I've invested 5,000 rand and it's done. So I'm like, okay. He says, tomorrow morning, you'll have a success manager who will phone you. And he's the guy who's going to hold your hand through the process. The next morning, success manager phoned me and his name was Ali, or they call him, yeah, Ali, Amiros. And he was my success manager. And after talking to me for about half an hour, telling me how he's from Joburg and he's been doing this forever and all I need to do is trust him. He's going to show me how to trade. He'll tell me when to put in, when to take out, stop loss, all these things. He says, like, just don't worry. But I'm actually going to ask you, you need to put in 50,000 rand because 5,000 rand, we're going to do it nowhere. You know, if we want to make some money, then let's put in 50,000 rand. So now that was, the first deposit was the 17th. The 19th, I put in 50,000 rand. And so obviously he had, oh, sorry, on the 17th, the 18th, he did like four trades, which showed a profit of like 5,000, 8,000, 3,000. So on the 19th, when he approached me about this 50,000 rand, I was like, okay, yeah, I've seen we can make profit. You've held my hand amazingly. So let's go with 50. And the next thing I know, we do a couple of trades and there's profit and there's profit. And you're looking at like, all of a sudden, there's 17,000 and there's a profit of like 20,000. And so then all of a sudden, there was this, I think it was at Iran, and there's the bombs exploding and all the rest. So he phoned me, he says, listen, we've got an opportunity. We can invest in crude oil right now. With what's going on, you've got it. But I need 100 or 200K, nothing less. If we want to make this work, we've got to do it now. So I'm like, he goes, we've got a chance now. It's like happening in the next half an hour. Are you ready? So I'm like, okay. So I put in 100,000 rand. And he then phones me back that afternoon and he says, listen, actually, we need more. So this pushing attitude. So then another guy, Alex, basically phones me. And he says, now, listen, this is all happening. Ollie's very busy. You know, we've got it. We need another 100,000. Can you do another 100,000? So you get overwhelmed. And the next thing they say to you, you put in another 100,000. Tomorrow morning, you can withdraw everything and you leave an only your profit. So this escalates and this pushy effect carried on for 4 days, where on the last day, the promise then was NASDAQ. And then he all of a sudden was sitting next to a guy and he says, listen, I've got a guy next to me, Chris, and he deals only with a multimillionaire guys who've got their obviously massive accounts with us. And he's just saying, if you can have 800,000 in your account, then with our bonuses, then he will trade with you for NASDAQ. And I put in the last bit of my money. So by now I'd put in 1 week, 458,000 Rand, which was every last cent that I own. And the next morning I wake up to no phone calls, nothing. So I anxiously just thought, I think I know what's happened, that this is a scheme. So I have not slept now for days. Like it's become a whirlwind. I don't think anyone can actually understand what goes on because I hadn't told my partner and it all happened so quickly. He was in Durban installing a gym at Hilton College. And so I just realized that, yeah, something's happened. So I climbed in my car and my youngest daughter was home and I just said, do you need to drive me? We need to find these people. So I go to the head office, which is supposedly in Strand Street. Oh, yeah. And there is nothing there. There's just a plaque. So I go outside and there's just a security guard. He says, no. There's nobody here. You have to have a meeting. So I just said, oh, somebody needs to phone me. I'm not moving. So eventually, 45 minutes later, somebody phones me from bank. So, and it was an Alex who just started shouting at me saying, what is your problem? Why are you there? So I said, I just need to withdraw all my money. I need to get out of here. Something feels wrong. And he says, no, this is not how you go about it. I don't know why you started trading in the first place if you don't know what you're doing. So I said, well, that's what I did. I've emailed, I've WhatsApped, I've phoned. There is nobody you can phone. Nobody replies to an email. There's a call line that is in another country. And I just sent messages saying, please, I'm over my head. I can't do this. I can't sleep. I'm nauseous. It's just been going on for 2 weeks where I think I just felt suicidal. So I drove home. And Ollie phones me and he says he'll set up in a meeting with the head office in Foreshore. Eventually, I get a meeting with them. I'm not sure the date, but it was a Friday. And my daughter came with me and I get there. And after a while struggling to get in, eventually they let me up to the eighth floor. And then there is a platform of black traders. It's very funky. There's a whole lot of traders. It's noisy. And I meet these two guys who take me to an office and then they sit down, explain the company is completely legitimate. I've got nothing to worry about. He looks at my account and says, don't worry about your account. It's absolutely fine. He says, yes, I instantly closed whatever trades when I thought that this was a complete scam. So I just closed it all down because I thought I just need to get out of here. So he says, don't worry. Your account looks amazing. Are you happy with Ollie as your investment manager? So I said, yeah, he's great. I said, I've just been pushed and shoved and petrified. And I don't think you understand that this is overwhelming because this is not a field that I am experienced in. And I just feel it's just too big for me. So he says, don't worry. We've got you. Ollie is going to hold your hand. You don't need to listen to anybody but Ollie. So he phones me as I get home that evening. And he just says to me, I hear you want to withdraw all your money. So I said, I really do. So he just said, listen, we're not going to withdraw your money right now. What I'm going to do is you've lost 68,000 Rand. I'm going to make that 68,000 Rand for you now. Tomorrow morning, once you've made that 68, you can just withdraw all your money and you can have peace of mind. So I said, wow, okay, that would be amazing. So leave it to me. So they basically, you get into the platform and they'll say to you, as Trading Central says, you should invest in crude oil on the buy. And I would suggest that you put in so many lots and then you go and then he'll say to you, now just press buy or sell. So then you go ahead and then he'll say, right, the next one we're going to do is we're going to trade in USD against the ZAR. And this one's going to be a sell. And I want you to trade 4 lots. And every lot you trade is where they make their money. They make their money on the lots that you put in. The next thing I know, 3 days later, everything's just running at a 200 minus 200 minus 150 minus 80. It goes up and down all day long. It goes up and then it goes down. And it was Friday afternoon. My mum was staying with me and I get a call to say that my free margins are too little. If I don't put another 200,000 rand in immediately, then I might as well just say goodbye to my money. So I said to him, I don't have another 200,000. He says, well, go to the bank and loan, go to a friend. He goes, it's not my problem. I need you to go and find the 200,000 and invest it right now. I said, I can't. There is nothing more I can do. At this stage, I'm like, there is nothing more I can do. I'm WhatsApping, I'm messaging, I'm asking, can please somebody from Cape Town just get hold of me? Is anybody, just talk to me, tell me what are my options? So 3 hours later that evening, I got a phone call from the Alex who says, listen, what we're going to do is we're going to trade against one of your trades. If you've got to buy, we're going to do a sell to try and create more free margin, which they do, which spirals completely out of control. Trading closed on the weekend. So Monday morning, I wake up and I can't get hold of anybody. Tuesday, I'm told everything is absolutely fine. My account looks fine. Don't worry, ride the wave. You'll be fine. On Wednesday, I think it's the 16th and the 17th, I wake up to an email saying your account's been closed. So that's 17th of October. And so I woke up to realizing that every single cent that I've ever saved in my life is gone and that my account is closed and there is nobody. I can't get hold of anybody. My father happened to be here overnight because it was my daughter's birthday before. And I went to go and admit to him what's just happened. And obviously, I need to phone my partner to let him know that I have just lost every cent. It happened so fast, so quickly that I didn't know how to tell anyone because it just was so out of control. So from there, I just phoned everyone. I phoned Discovery Bank. I obviously reported fraud. I went to the police station, reported a fraud case. I got hold of FSCA. I put a case in with them. I got hold of reporters. I think it's a rake for NECAC. I emailed every possible newspaper. I have just done everything I can in my power to try and, one, get hold of these people, two, find out what I can do, and three, get this out there for other women or people who will get affected by this in such a short, rapid space of time. Once you've got 50,000, 100,000, 10,000 in, you cannot get it out. It's just, there is nobody to help you. There is nobody. They are so convincing. It is so incredible how clever they are. The manipulation is unbelievable. It's like a whirlwind. And before you know it, you're in so deep and they have you. And there was a moment when he says, just find another 200,000. I was thinking like, do I actually approach somebody like my dad? And then I realized, just stop. And yeah, here I sit today talking to you and realizing that I need to borrow rent so that I can cover my expenses right now. So I just now need to find a way to get through this and make sure that somehow we put a stop to this because it is affecting hundreds of people and to such a great, I can't explain, but I mean, to the point of actually suicidal. And it's overwhelming. So yeah, I have a case number and that's where I sit today. And yeah, thank you for hearing my story. I'm a little bit nervous, so I don't know if I got it all out there, but that is basically what happened to me in a matter of basically 3 weeks.
Claire, thank you for sharing that with us and being so articulate and actually logical in the way that you unpacked it. It cannot be easy when you're in a situation like you're in. What I can say to you is that many, many people will hear this. Many, many people will be protected by this. And only because you came out will others perhaps not fall into the same trap. I mean, the awful high-pressure salesmanship in the financial services industry, sadly, is not a new thing. Boiler rooms like this exist all over the world, and they prey on the trusting and often the innocent, who are then convinced, because they don't know enough about the particular subject, to follow along with what they're being advised by these so-called experts. We thank you very much again, Claire, for sharing that story with us. And I think that if there's one thing that you can take, that is that, yes, it's a terrible experience, but on the other hand, you have no idea how many other people you will be helping and saving from having a similar issue. That was Claire unveiling some more insights into the Bankso story. We've been following this in the past week. I can assure you that we're not letting go, and I'm delighted that my former colleagues at MoneyWeb are doing the same thing. Well done, guys, over there. It is a public service at the end of the day that one is in when you're in the media business. And we're here to serve you. And in a case like this, it is something that the more people who know about it, the less the miscreants can play their dirty games. I'm Alec Hogg. It's been my pleasure to be with you again for the Biz News Briefing, and look forward to the next time, which of course will be on Monday at 7 a.m. You can get all of the main stories here on Biz News TV. You can get the whole program on our Biz News Radio channels. And don't forget, there's lots more besides on biznews.com. Until Monday, cheerio.